Welcome to The Road Show.
In South Africa.
It brings people together, it breaks down barriers.
Winning. To be the best. To be the best is something we strive for.
South Africa's crucial role in South Africa.
Compassion.
Great. Passion. Fiction.
Gold.
Ultimate goal.
Glory. Relentless training. Pain.
Pain.
Hello, ladies and gents, and welcome to another cracking episode of The Road Show. Today, we are digging into the hype train of the European Championships of 2024. As always, it's myself, Lawrence Britton, and with me is Mr. Green. How are you doing, Jake?
Lawrence, I'm not too bad. And, you know, I feel like we are releasing episodes every week at this point, you know, chatting about rowing. It's very exciting. It was just the other week that we had World Cup One. And just on the trot, we had European champs already. And yeah, I'm really excited. Obviously, it's a big year, Olympic year, and the racing always is elevated in the Olympic years. And Europeans, obviously, even though, you know, Lawrence, Europeans is a continental event, it is, you know, still quite an important event on the world rowing calendar. Because if you think about how many European countries that are prominent in rowing, it is a very important event for, you know, the whole of rowing as a whole. So, you know, it's going to be really interesting racing to watch this weekend and see how it influences the rest of the world and how, you know, what can we pick up, I think, from Europeans going forward.
Yeah, I'm always a little bit disappointed with this event because I feel like another World Cup or another, I don't know why, like it irritates me that it's just for Europeans. It's such a big event. I want to see everyone have the opportunity to race it. So I do understand it, but I don't really agree with it. I want to see a full open regatta. I don't know why you want to like segregate it to, you know, Europeans only at this point of the season. I feel like it's a bit unnecessary. But that being said, it's going to be an awesome regatta and I can't wait to watch it. So I think it's going to be another good one. You know, World Cup One was an incredible start to the season and we really got a taste for the Olympic Games and what we're in for the season. But yeah, I think we're just going to learn that a little bit more this regatta and some more exciting racing. And yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to it.
So Lawrence, I wanted to chat to you quickly about like what you think about the schedule this year. You know, the Olympics is such a big event, but you have quite a tight, because the Olympics are early in the season, it squashes the racing into a really tight schedule compared to what we're used to. And as a country, as a nation, as an athlete, like how do you think they manage the tight schedule? You know, we're going to talk about some crews that have decided to miss the Europeans for other events, but you know, how does it factor in? And then, you know, do you think this impacts at all the training that the countries are able to do? Because, you know, if you're racing the first World Cup, Europeans, second World Cup, the third World Cup, like that's like almost chock-a-block every 2 weeks you've got a big event on. And then you have the Olympics. So like, what do you make of the schedule? And do you think there is a certain like racing fatigue element that you have to be careful of, especially in the Olympic year?
I think as a spectator, it's amazing. I think having this like tight racing, you know, like tight format racing is very, very cool. I think having, you know, racing quite often keeps you like in the season. You know, it doesn't feel like, you know, sometimes if the season's a bit too long, it's like you almost forget about the previous World Cup before the next one's going, whereas this is like kind of on the boil. And you kind of picking up and you learning a lot as the season goes on because you're still fresh with World Cup One and now we have Europeans. Now we're going to go into World Cup Two, into World Cup Three and into the Olympic Games. It's like, I think it's quite exciting from a fan and a spectator point of view. From an athlete, I do think there's a risk of, maybe not like racing fatigue, but maybe losing the training, because I mean these regattas take a lot out of you and you've got to do a bit of prep beforehand. Even if you're doing less and you're not stressed as much, you're still not getting in as much training as you would be if you were on a training camp or something like that. So I think there is a risk of like losing training to other countries. I mean, for instance, Jake, you guys have just been on training camp over the first World Cup into this weekend and you back on training camp next week. So you're getting like a ton of training in where these other countries are racing quite a lot. So there are benefits to the racing, but there's also a lot of benefits to getting that extra training in. I don't know, where do you sit on this point?
I think, you know, as the way rowing works at the moment, I think you have to be quite careful. I think especially these, especially if you're a crew that has to go to lake qualifiers, and you know, you have to be very careful about how you manage, I think, the racing leading up. But I there is a trade-off to these things. I think every time you make a decision in elite sport, you have to weigh up odds. You know, there's no risk-free medal at the end of the day. So you have to take risks in your decision-making. And I think on the other end of things, you can do a lot of training. But you and I know that there's nothing that can simulate racing experience. Literally nothing that you can do will actually prepare you for six-lane racing. You can be physiologically really prepared, aerobically super fit, but the mentality that goes into side-by-side racing is the best in the world is, you know, you can't simulate that in any way. So at the end of the day, it depends on what you're after. You know, I typically feel like, you know, Lucerne is the big one, so if I was like a director of a European nation, I'd always put Lucerne and World Champs and possibly Europeans are the sort of non-negotiables, and maybe pick another one more regatta to see how things fit in. But in an ideal world, I think I would have it that all European countries are incentivized to go to every, or not European, but all countries are incentivized to go to every single event.
I think that there should be like mega prize money for the series, the season, the whole season. So I think you should compress the season, have it running like exactly like it is now. And then for the people that win, like you accumulate points. And yes, maybe you have more points available at a World Champs, but I think those points accumulate throughout the season. And then winner takes all at the end. And that'll encourage a lot of countries that are like kind of on the fence to commit to these and especially to those little bit smaller regattas, which will mean that small countries that are like picking and choosing, you know, if you're only going to go to one regatta, you're definitely going to go to Lucerne. But if all the regattas start getting bigger, you might pick and choose a different regatta to go to, give that regatta a lot more value. And I mean, especially now, I think Lucerne, I was looking at like how expensive it is for countries to go to Lucerne. I mean, Lucerne is Switzerland, I think, is the most expensive, or their Swiss franc is the most, is like the highest currency in the world at the moment. So I think it's going to be damn expensive for countries, no matter where you're from, to go there. And it would be nice if some of these other regattas could compete with that, with the level of kind of participation. But Jake, before we get into this regatta, there was a bit of news or kind of stuff I wanted to run through before we got going. So, I mean, first of all, just a shout out again to our Patreons, amazing team of people, amazing crew and collection of really rowing, massive rowing fans. And it's amazing being part of our group and, you know, getting the knowledge and the, you know, there's so much that gets shared on there coming into these regattas, around the regatta, after the regatta. Like if you enjoy the kind of data and even just chat and banter around the racing, this is such a perfect place for you. And yeah, I think it's such a cool kind of space that has become, that has resulted from the row show and from people supporting our show. So if you're interested, definitely head over there and we'll add you in. But otherwise, the other thing I want to chat about, Jake, is South Africa just launched a massive like supporters campaign for our national team. So I think most national teams around the world are government funded. Ours is government funded, but poorly. So our like kind of rowing organization has put together like a plan to help people support the show. So they're not asking for like massive donations and things like that. They're just asking for a small subscription, very similar, I would say, to our Patreon group. And it's just people passionate about rowing. They want to keep the, you know, so either they attach to our Rowing South Africa team, or they, you know, have rowed in the past, or, you know, they just want to help out a nation that is trying to keep rowing and keep their dreams alive for our sport. So I think it's a really cool initiative, and I don't think they are going to break the bank and become millionaires off it. But I think it's enough to just make sure that the team always functions, always has that support, and, you know, can always represent themselves at a world champs and through those important regattas, and especially through the, like, tougher years. I think, you know, it's great when there is support and the support runs smoothly, but when things don't run as smoothly, then you definitely need that kind of backup. But Jake, you in the team, so maybe you tell us a little bit more about how it is for you guys.
Yeah, well, you know, it's really exciting. I think it's a common plight of rowers around the world. I think very, very seldom do you have systems where rowing is as well funded as, I suppose, some of the other larger sports. So it is a really cool initiative. And like you said, it's like a subscription model. And they also, you can make donations. But I think the idea is to have a subscription model and create, you know, a large base of, you know, small monthly donations. But obviously, if you scale it up, it makes a significant impact. And like, I think for me, the biggest thing is securing the next generation of South African rowers and the young ones coming through, because we both know, you know, how hard it is to keep athletes going on from Olympics to Olympics, and just from leaving school and university and under 23s, and, you know, providing financial support for things like camps and tours, and even at the end of the day, a little bit of athlete, you know, personal financial support for the athletes. So it's a really important initiative and a really exciting one from South African rowers. And, you know, to all the South African supporters of the Row Show, you know, we really are calling upon you guys to have a look and, you know, see if you can, you know, find, you know, support the South African rowing in a meaningful way and become part of the community. And I think also to any South African big fans out there that want to maybe be, add a bit more support to South Africa's rowing, I think it'll be a really good thing to be a part of. And also, I do believe that there is going to be certain rewards on it. I think there are going to be a lot of sort of interaction, you know, interactive events that I think the subscription model will offer to, you know, meet and greet and meet the athletes and part of the team. So, yeah, you know, the Row Show, we are an international podcast, but Lawrence and I both come from, you know, South African rowing community. It's where we fell in love with the sport, and it's where we started the podcast. So, you know, just a big shout out there to where we both started off. And, you know, just a quick shout out on the Row Show. I think it's definitely worth everyone's time there to have a look if you're interested.
Yeah, nicely said, Jake. That's called We Row South Africa, and I will put the link in the show notes below, so you can go find that if you're looking for it. And yeah, I think you covered it there. I think, yeah, awesome initiative. Then on the other side of the coin, just some disturbing news that we saw this week come out is this whole scandal with World Anti-Doping Agency and China, with a lot of the Chinese swimmers having failed drug tests just before the Tokyo Games, and it like kind of getting covered up. And yeah, I think like mixed emotions from me reading the article, Jake. Like, I dug quite into it because initially I thought like there's no way WADA can do or would do something, you know, sneaky like that. So I thought, no, there must be like a reason. There was obviously evidence or something involved in it that kind of supported what their actions. And I know that has happened in the past. So that's where I kind of went to read in about it. Like I was saying to you earlier, Jake, I think in 2017, a whole lot of like athletes' chew forms got leaked. And that's like if you're sick or you know you have asthma or something and you need to take some form of medication to kind of actually get you back to health, you can submit a chew form if that medication is on the drug free sport list. You can submit a chew form and they will review it, look at your medical records, and say yes or no, you're allowed to take it or not. So I think a lot of athletes do have to put those in, you know, if things are if you're not well, or, you know, as I said, like, I think asthma is like a very good example. And when those got leaked, a lot of noise around them being like, oh, these people are cheating, these people are breaking the rules and that, and whereas that's not really the case. So that's what I kind of thought reading this article. But as I dug in more and more, it sounded more and more suspicious. So I'd like to read a little bit more about it. I'm not going to jump straight to conclusions yet, because WADA defended themselves quite heavily on this topic. So I think there must be kind of two sides to this this discussion, but definitely very fishy. And Jake, as we said, like, anyone that blames the chef or their food getting contaminated by a banned substance, I call bullshit straight away.
I never run that risk
of like, oh my God, this chef could spike my my noodles with testosterone or something. I never felt that that was a remote possibility. What do you think?
Yeah, and Leo Lawrence, I agree with you 100%. And like, at the end of the day, I just think it hurts the athlete, number one. And I think both of us are from a viewpoint, you know, the athlete is the most important part of this whole process. And I think when you are in a situation where the integrity of our sport is getting compromised at levels that are sort of very high institutional levels that are being alluded to in this article, especially when it says that there seems to be a fair amount of shenanigans happening at WADA itself and China too. So it's really disappointing to see. And yeah, I just hope it stays out of the sport. I just don't think the repercussions at this point in time are high enough at all. I think there should be much harsher repercussions if you get caught testing. I've said it on the show many times, but I do think if you get found first time offense, fair enough, you can get a suspension. But I think if you're a multiple time offender, banned for life. I don't think you should be allowed to compete at an elite level if you get caught again. And, you know, if you get caught, if an institution, you know, a governing body coming from a different country gets caught, then, you know, that's shocking, because it just shows that it's not, I think one thing that you're worried about is athletes, you know, trying to cheat and get an unfair advantage on their competitors. But what's really scary is if it's on an institutional level, then it's not athletes, it's a body that's saying, we want to get results for one reason or other, and we're going to sort of integrate this cheating into the sport from a top-down level, which sort of permeates right through, which is really dangerous. And I think that's where the culture can sort of become a little bit more accepted. And then you have, you know, younger athletes, you know, being under a lot of pressure to do something they're not happy with and then get caught up in something like this. So it's really disappointing to see, but, you know, we'll see how the situation develops, and hopefully it's, you know, it's not as bad as it seems. But anyway, yeah, that's my two cents. I just think the repercussions need to be much stronger. And until that happens, I think you're not gonna get rid of it.
Yeah,
I think there's always going to be this.
I feel
happening.
Like if you raise the repercussions, then you get more of this kind of drama of like hush hush, trying to like cover it up before it kind of takes off, because the repercussions go higher, and especially with the, like, you know, the Russian like institutionalized doping, it's, I don't know how you combat it. And it, as you say, it's bad for the athlete, but it's terrible for the sports. Like, for all these sports that get implicated in it. And yeah, I just think it's yeah, really disappointing to see. And yeah, I just wish there were more ways that, you know, that the sports could combat it, because I think that's the tricky part, is that it's so difficult to fight. You're always a step behind, you're always trying to play catch up, and there's just so much against you, and these cheating bastards can kind of, so many ways they can get away with it. But yeah, just have to train harder, Jake, and beat them all. That's the way.
Yeah, that's the way, dude.
What did the British swimmer James Guy just said? Ban them all.
Ban them all. Well, I think I feel the same way. They ban them.
But anyway, that's enough of that. I want to jump in to this regatta coming up. What did we say, Jake's Seged Hungary
Hungary. You know, it's the first time we haven't seen Sega too many times on the rowing calendar. Hey, Lawrence.
Yeah, I was looking up at it though. It's like it's quite a serious city in Hungary, and the course looks pretty decent. I can't say I know too much about it. I haven't raced there. I don't know anyone that has raced there. Maybe Ramon, I would say, has been up there, but not in the last 15 years has there been racing there, I don't think. At least not a World Cup or a...
Well, not since the Rose Show we've been covering World these events have we had somewhere in Hungary, because we would have known.
Yeah, but pretty awesome, but
we haven't covered.
So.
Yeah, I know, it's very cool. And I definitely think, Lawrence, a thing that I feel like we should see more, a bigger variety of courses. I'm always disappointed that we don't go to Spain anymore, especially after the last time. I think it was hosted, when was it hosted, Lawrence? In 2004? Not 2004, that was Olympic year. 2002, that was the one. It was such an epic regatta. And it's just cool to have it.
That's where his record got broken.
Yeah, that's where it got broken, where the Aussies chased the Brits out the pair and put them in the four.
I want to say there was a World Cup there in 2008, Bagnoles. Yeah.
Anyway, without detracting from the topic at hand, definitely cool to see some racing in Hungary. I'm really excited to see the course. And Lawrence, I think another thing to chat about is a couple things I wanted to highlight. Number one, I think Romania are going to be a big team to watch this weekend. They historically have produced very strong results at European champs. We know that Europeans is an important part of their sort of national funding scheme. You know, they consider Europeans as like a very high event that determines how well funded or whatever they get. I don't know the ins and outs of it, but I basically know that for them, this is the second biggest event of the year. So, you know, Romania have always been historically strong, and it's going to be a debut performance of the Romanian team. We haven't seen them at World Cup one, so we're going to see them. They're going to be good to watch. And then some noticeable absentees, and I think the big one is the Netherlands, have decided not to send their Olympic squad, their A senior elite rowers. They have under 23s and development athletes here, but none of their Olympic rowers. So a bit disappointing, but you know, I understand we were talking about how the schedule works and whatnot, but they're definitely going to be missed. The only exception to that is the Dutch pair of Nicholas van Sprung and Guillaume Kramerhoek, who are competing at late qualifiers. They obviously have opted into Europeans as a preparation event for late qualification, so it'll be good to see them racing in the pair. And then the last thing, Lawrence, is also noticed that Ireland haven't sent many crews. The only ones that I noticed were Paula Donovan, who's entered into men's single sculls, and interestingly enough, the Irish women's double is here with Zoe Hyde and Alison Bergen, who are certainly a force to be reckoned with, that have found some really good speed. So yeah, I think missing those two countries at this Europeans, but yeah, I think it's going to still make for a really interesting event nonetheless.
100%, Jake. I think the event is going to be amazing, and if I have to pick one thing that I'm super excited to see is the Romanians back in action and seeing where they fit into kind of this puzzle piece that we were missing at World Cup One. And I really want to see like where all their crews fit in, how their kind of off season has gone and their preseason has gone, and now that we into racing, where do they land in the build up to World Cup Two, where we're going to see, you know, all the continental athletes coming out to play and join the battle. So Romania for me is the kind of watching point for this regatta, and there's some very interesting crews that they've entered into the regatta. So Jake, I think actually digging into the different events, should we start with a big event, the men's single skull? I think let's kick off with that. For me, quite similar to World Cup One, all eyes on Ollie, and if he just keeps going from strength to strength, and there's nothing really that's indicating that he's gonna slow down or have a wobbly I don't know. But what do you think? I
Lawrence,
think
Ollie's had two wobblies at Europeans his last 2 years. You know, he hasn't been European champion this cycle so far. If you cast your mind back, the Netherlands sent two different rowers in the last 2 years to Europeans, and they both had phenomenal performances to win. So I think Ollie is definitely going to be looking to get this one in his.
Yeah, but he hasn't had a wobbly since Europeans last year.
Yeah, I suppose he hasn't. He's been pretty flipping flawless. And he's definitely looking to find up a really good race. And I think this is actually an interesting talking point, is that, you know, Stefanos Antuscus, the Greek Olympic champion, has always had exceptionally good form at Europeans. You know, he came away with silver medal the last 2 years it's raced, and he's had really strong races. And every time he races at Europeans, I kind of feel like he goes out in his, when I see him race, it looks like it's a 1v1 against Ollie. His energy just seems to be directed towards Ollie, and he's racing him, not necessarily the rest of the field. And, you know, I think it's going to be a big outing for Stefanos, because we've heard some news from some sources that he's been doing some really good things in training. So I'm really looking forward to see Stefanos, because we haven't seen, I think, his Olympic form yet this cycle. I mean, he's had some good results. I think he had a really tight race at World Champs last year to just finish off the podium. But I think he's going to need a particularly good season to get back on that Olympic podium, let alone become an Olympic champion.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. And then for me, for Ali, I think like he had a big mental mountain to climb after Tokyo. I think he, you know, he came into the sport, he was brilliant from day one. You know, everything just kind of came to him, and he learned and he got better and better. And then, you know, the games was like his first kind of big upset. And I mean, we know from this show, from chatting from hundreds of athletes, there's so many athletes that have some real dark days out there before they manage to come back and get their best performances. So I think that Ollie had like a lot to kind of get over, and a big mountain to climb from like a mental point of view after Tokyo. And I think that's where you see those wobblies, Europeans last year. But yeah. I mean, since then he's just become like a flipping rock, dude. He's so good at these races, and he's gone better and better every race that we've kind of watched him. So I do think that there's always pressure, and there's always pressure to perform, but I think he's definitely the safe bet at the moment, and I would say he's the safe bet for this almost this whole regatta.
Yeah.
But then some other awesome names to watch. I mean, Paul O'Donovan. That's so cool that he's entered into
the heavy single. How do you think he's going to finish in this order? Do you think he's going to be competitive against some of the big dogs in the men's skull?
Yeah, I mean, it depends though. Like if he's racing because he has an injury or something, and that's why he's not in the lighty double, and maybe they're struggling with weight, then I don't think he's going to have the best regatta. But if maybe it's Fintan is struggling and he's resting it up whilst Paul is powering it on, then I think we definitely will see him in the A final. I'll say then that's where I'll put my money, on Paul in the A final.
Okay, we're starting this thing again, Lauren. This whole starting. Prediction thing again.
Yeah, I'm going with my predictions. Ziedler to win, Paul in the A final.
Yeah, spice. I think that's a good shot, though. I also think Paul, if he, you know, there are a lot of conditions, but I think if he's fully fit and on some good form, I think he'll definitely be racing the A final. I don't know if he'll be able to medal, but he will be in the A final.
He's not far from Stefanos. He's a big dude.
No, I know he's a big guy, and Stefanos also comes from a lightweight background. So I'm not saying, yeah, maybe he's got a chance of medaling. You never know. I think if he medals, it'll be a really good, it'll be a fantastic sort of start for him.
If I had to choose, I would say, oh my word, I want a pumping tailwind for this regatta. That'll make the men's single damn exciting. You got Stefanos, you got Paul O'Donovan. Even the French entering Onfroy, the one of the Onfroy brothers. I mean,
yeah,
these
the
are
one that qualified
like,
the double last year with Hugo Buchran.
Yeah,
he's racing
so
them in single.
I mean, they are also small tailwind kind of experts, I would say. So, you know, if we have that pumping tail, I think the racing will be in the men's pair. I mean, in the single will be significantly more exciting. But, you know, yeah. I still think it's going to be one of the better races of the regatta.
I mean, the single scull always seems to put out, you know, really good races. I think it's just the nature of the event. But what I'm looking forward to is, I think if there's a tailwind, Stefanos is going to win this event. Ali's going to come second. And, you know, I don't know who's going to come get the sort of bronze. We need to see who's on form. I would maybe shout out, say, Sverre Nielsen. If he's back on form, he's going to be a big contender. And I think we haven't seen sort of too much from him. He's had some good races here and there at the Odd World Cup. He missed 2022. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it was really fast. You know, if he started training last year, you know, he's still not quite at that sort of full potential yet, that full capacity. Whereas now I think there would be enough time for him to reach his sort of physiological upper limit. So, yeah, I think I'm going to keep my eye on Sferi this weekend. And then also Damian Martin. He seems to be running hot and cold a little bit. But I think he's just been an absolute legend in this event and always finds an extra gear when it comes to the Olympic season. So huge. He's going to be a big name for me to watch in the men's single scull. So you never know how things end up in this event. You know, it's Europe. If Europeans have told us anything, Lawrence, is to expect the unexpected in the men's single sculls.
Definitely. And then let's jump straight across to women's single. I think big notable absentee is the Dutch. I think we definitely going to see her missing and feel that. So what do you think there, Jake? But I still think there's good racing though for the rest of the field.
No, it's going to be very good racing. And I think it is an event that lacks the presence of the Continentals, and Karen Florian is going to be a huge presence that's going to be missed. But at the end of the day, it allows other athletes to get their chance in the sun, so to speak. And I think build confidence going into the Olympic season. And I don't think it's uncommon to see athletes that get chances like to race in an event that might be missing their, you know, their top performer, but be able to execute a good race, get a bit of confidence and use their confidence later on the season. But to talk about those sort of those scholars that are going to be looking to take the win, we have some very interesting mixes of youth and experience. I think on the experience side of things, we have Denislava Angelova from Bulgaria, who's become quite a dominant presence in the women's single sculls. She finished fifth last year at World Champs, and I think she's a sort of veteran from Bulgaria. And another one to look out for is Victoria Sinkute from Lithuania, who had an absolute blinder at World Champs, making it into the A final, finishing sixth. And then the two sort of young gun athletes that have sort of been on this sort of circuit for the last 2-3 years, definitely a name being thrown around, is Alexander Foster from Germany and Aurelia Maxima Katharina Janssen from Switzerland, the infamous.
Yes, batting out the names, Jake. Nice.
Batting out the names. So I think those four athletes are definitely going to be fighting for the gold medal. Foster and Maxima have had really good results at Europeans. They both have won silver medals at this event. Foster way back in 2022, I think when she was only 19, 20 years old. And Maxima took second place last year. So I think we have a good recipe for some really tight racing. And I think don't underestimate how much there is to race for this weekend. You know, it is European Championships, so it is a penultimate event. You know, it's not like a once off of a series. Like there's one chance to become a European champion every single year. So I think for these athletes here, it's a big deal, especially in events like the single sculls. And perhaps the last name to shout out is Jovana Osic from Serbia, who's been quite a consistent dark horse in the women's single sculls, producing really good results. So I think we have a really good mix of athletes here for a good weekend of racing.
No, 100%, Jake. I think you covered everything there. I think we were quite hard on Maxima for World Cup 1. I just expect a lot from her. I think she's such an absolute beast of an athlete. I think she's a serious, serious athlete. So we want to see her at the front there. We want to see her either like destroying the field with her Mac on blades or switching to a conventional setup and doing the real damage that we know she's capable of. So I think that'll be a good race though. You know, as you said, between all these, you know, we've got the kind of experienced group and then this young group, and to kind of seeing where they all land together is going to be interesting. And with Caroline Florin out of it, it's going to be, you know, it's all open for those gold medals. But then, Jake, Lawrence, the other thing that we didn't...
Oh, no, you go ahead there before I'd interrupt.
I wanted to... you go if you want to add something there, because I want to talk about how we got the qualification that we haven't really chatted about.
Oh, yes, we haven't chatted about that. Sorry, let's actually get into that. So this weekend is also running in tandem. So it starts on the same day, but it is a different event. There's the European Late Qualification Regatta, which starts on the Friday. It occupies the morning slot of racing, and that is just the men and women single sculls and the lightweight doubles that are racing for qualification spots. It's the top three in the sculls, top two in the lighty doubles. I don't think there's not too much there to talk about because it doesn't really add too much, I guess, to the bigger picture at the end of the day. You know, I think when I looked at the racing, I was considering whether we get stuck into it, but, you know, there doesn't seem to be that much happening. I think the only thing that has a big effect on Europeans is that the lightweight doubles in the men and women sides are missing a lot of entries. And I think it's because of all the athletes are going to be racing for those last spots in the European late qualification regatta.
I was surprised that there's not more people in the single, because I feel like there's not that many people that have qualified yet for the single. So I feel like there's a few spots available for some of these European countries and they don't seem to be biting. Like a big one is like the Italians.
Yes.
They're not qualified in the single, but they have two singles racing at the European champs. So that piece I'm not 100% sure of, but the lighty doubles, men and women, that is packed full. That has got big, there's going to be big racing there for those last few. I think that you said there's two spots for the lighty men's and three spots. I mean, two spots for the lightweight doubles and three spots for the singles, right?
Yes, that's correct. And Lawrence, also like Germany, another thing is like Germany hasn't qualified the lightweight double and they're racing and Europeans are not at the late qualification European regatta. So again, I think Lawrence, there are funny rules with regards to like, you know, if you have qualified these boats, you can't qualify a boat through European continental. So I think that might be the reason that you have Italy and Germany that aren't competing, because they probably blocked. They're probably saving those last quota spots to smaller nations that haven't yet got any Olympic representation. And I wouldn't be surprised at late qualification, you're going to find the likes of the German lightweight double and the Italian single scullers racing for those last spots, because I think those last spots at the final qualification regatta are more open. I don't think they're completely open. You know, not. I think there still are some stipulations, but I think they're more open to countries to race.
Definitely. I'll do some reading over the weekend, but I think you've hit the nail on the head there. I think that they are blocked from competing because of how many other crews that they have qualified.
The
qualification procedure is damn complicated. It's not straightforward at all. But it can't really be straightforward. Like, it has to have all these nuances. You know, you need the games to be inclusive of a lot of countries, and you need the best of the best there. So, you know, they have a fine a line to walk between those two, and I think they do pretty well. I think our qualification, as complicated as it is, I think it's a very good and fair system to allow participation, but also focus on performance.
Yeah, I'm happy with how the system works at the moment, and it's going to be. I think we definitely chat about it in the Regatta Madness episode about how the racing went at the late qualification. But Lawrence, I think to get back into the European champs, the racing there, for me, the biggest event of the weekend and the most stacked event and the most competitive, going to bring the best racing without a doubt, Lawrence, is the men's pair, your favorite. just getting into it. I mean, we have the, you know, we have all the medalists except for Ireland from the last two world champs. So we have Romania, we have Spain, we have GB, we have the Olympic champions, the Sinkovic brothers, who are have a tough road ahead of them. And you have some really exciting racing. And I think, Lawrence, what makes this event so good at the moment is that you have so many pairs that are, number one, tested combinations, and number two, are competitive. I think once you have those two things, you get a really exciting event. So like, a lot of these boats have won medals at World Cups, at World Champs, whatever. And a lot of these boats know how to make the pair move fast. And in this event, I mean, we let's bring it up right now. I think if we were to talk about any Hungarian combination this weekend, we have the Hungarian pair, who is literally, I don't know, they might be the longest combination in rowing history. They've been rowing together for 15 years. They first competed in 2009. Lawrence was there at under 23s, and they're racing this weekend. So massive shout out to Simon Bella and Juhas Adrian from this weekend. I think it's going to be exciting to see them back out there, but it's a very stacked field.
That is outrageous. It's not like, you know, there's a lot of athletes that we chat about that have very long careers, but there's not very many combinations that have like consistently performed together for that long. I mean, even the Kiwi pair was like exceptional for how long they kind of rode together for. So, you know, here you have these two guys and they've honestly been rowing together for 15 years. Like, I literally saw them. I remember even seeing them, you know, and racing against them in 2009. So that's a long time ago. And yeah, they consistently performed in the pair. They went through some really good, good years, I would say, building up to 2016. They were pretty decent. Then 2016, I also remember very clearly because these guys have a mega sprint on them. I think as they got older and wiser together, they just relied more and more on their sprint. So they basically row the first K at like a casual pace and then start to sprint at the 800 meter mark. And they would do real, real damage. I think they went in 2016, they went through final qualification. And I honestly,
yes, they did.
I want to lie about it, but I think they took like a 4-length deficit over the last like 700 meters.
But they also, I think to talk about probably their highlight was they became European champions in 2016. I don't know if you remember, Lawrence, but I think it was at Badenburg, and it was the most unholy weather you've ever seen at a event. It was literally almost unrowable.
Yeah.
And you just saw experienced crews not able to handle conditions and basically just, you know, steady state down the track because they couldn't race. And then you had the Hungarian pair, who are clearly very skilled, experienced rowers that can row in very rough conditions. They got a bit lucky with their lane and they took that opportunity to become European champions in 2016, which was a very memorable race. And also, they raced the Cox pair in 2017 and they won the world championships in a disgusting sprint. Again, Lawrence, overtaking like multiple boat lengths down on the Australian pair.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were 5 seconds down at the 1500 and they won. So,
yeah,
you know,
These guys have a proper sprint. And talking about Brandenburg, that's when Griskonis, I think he misses the start and then also has a cracker race in the rough there. And
yeah,
then,
of course he does.
But even in Rio, I remember we were racing our semi-final and they were in like lane 2 or 3 and we were in like lane 4 and Sean wasn't feeling 100%. So he was trying to like manage himself down the track. And I could see these guys start to charge at like 700 and we did have a decent step on them, but I see them charging and I'm like, Sean, we need to go. And he's like, no, he's trying to manage himself. I'm like, Sean, we need to go now. There's no waiting yet. And we snuck through there. So, yeah, these oaks know how to race and it'll be cool to see them back on the water. And I definitely agree with you, Jake, that this is the most stacked field and definitely where some of the best racing is going to come from. and it's hard to call. I mean, I think the British, like, I want to put my money on the British, but like the Swiss have been incredible. And I can't, I mean, I know the Sinkovicis didn't have a good time at World Cup one, but I still can't kind of write them off. These guys are Olympic champions across multiple boat classes. And yeah, I just think it's a big one. They have their backs against the wall, but I still think that they can pull some rabbits out the hat. And I'm very interested to see where Romania end up, because I think they have some very good athletes and they definitely know how to row these smaller boats and row the pair.
Mm. Yeah, I think you've hit some really good points there. I think the big thing is GP and Switzerland are the big dogs in this event. I mean, if you can even separate sort of the big dogs, so to speak, but you know, Switzerland, the world champs and the European champs from last year, taking away it was a massive race in the pair last year and the Swiss managed to win over the British. But the British, I think, have a higher speed ceiling, Lawrence. I think if you put the British down at their absolute best versus the Swiss at their absolute best, I think the GB pair comes out on top. I think they have the ability to row a faster time in the pair, and they have rowed a faster time in the pair. However, I think what counts against them is that the Swiss, and maybe it's more of a GB thing, but the Swiss seem to have really good BMT. They rise to the occasion. They demonstrated that at World Champs with a dominant win in the A final. And they showed that at European Champs again with a very, really cracker race. So we'll see how it ends up this weekend. But I also wanted to bring up the fact that you have the Dutch, who are back in the same combination they raced in Tokyo. You have Nicky van Sprung racing with Julian Kramerhoek. I mentioned it in the introduction. They're racing at European Champs this weekend. And they've had some really good racing over the years. So they're definitely going to be a name to watch out for. Definitely representations from the Netherlands here.
If they're going to go for the risky move of committing themselves to this pair, you know, like there's a lot of good Dutch crews out there that they could be in. And if they back this pair and they're going to go through late qualification to race this pair, it's got to be fast. They've got to come with magic from day one.
But also, Lawrence, they're just like, there's really good combinations all over the place. We haven't even mentioned the Spanish, who, even though they raced the B final last year at World Champs, they're bronze medalists from this event in Europeans last year. And they were also medalists in the pair in 22 at World Champs. They're racing. You have the Stankūnas brothers from Lithuania, who had possibly their best race of their careers last year, finishing fourth place. Literally less than a second separated them to first place Switzerland. And like when I talk about the fact that the pair has this depth, this is what I'm talking about. I'm talking about names that you've seen them racing really well. And you don't find this in a lot of other events. I mean, even against the Scullers, who typically have a much more sort of array of top Scullers that you recognize, the pair is becoming that sort of event. You've spoken about the Romanians. The other thing I wanted to talk about, Lawrence, is interesting, is the Serbians, who have been a dominant force. Well, not dominant. They've been struggling recently, but they're definitely a prominent name on the track. They have entered a new combination with Dusan Slavic and Viktor Pivak, who are racing the pair this weekend. Don't know what's happened to Martin Makovic and Vilos. I think it's Vilos Vacek.
Vacek.
I don't know where they've gone, but I think they're a notable exception. They also haven't qualified, so maybe they are choosing to opt out of this regatta and focusing on preparing for late qualifiers.
They also a pair that's been around for a while.
Yeah, no, and they have. And they're flipping quick as well.
And there's something to be said about these combinations that hang around for a long time. There's like, they might not be, you know, the most consistent athletes. They might not be crews that, you know, consistently win medals and you know, get it right all the time, like the Kiwi pair. But these crews that have rowed together for a long time often can come with big results on their day and perform. And I think it's just that, like, that time that you know, you kind of master the art of rowing the pair, which is such a, like, tricky, finicky boat. And when you've spent so much time in that boat with a single person, you know how to make that boat quick. And sometimes those puzzle pieces click into place.
Yeah, very well said there. And I think, again, it's and what makes the racing so exciting. But, you know, a shout out to the men's pair. You know, we have 17 entries, so we're going to have three finals to look forward to. And yeah, for me, definitely the pick of the bunch. But I think, Lawrence, if we want to chat about some other, you know, big ticket events to look out for, I wanted to maybe chat about on the women's side again. What I thought was quite interesting, Lawrence, is the women's quad has a surprising amount of entries at this event, and a surprising depth of quality that I suppose we aren't used to seeing in the women's quad. And to have the women's quad with 11 entries, which I thought was really interesting to see. And what's cool about it is that you again have the world champions competing. You have really interesting talking points. So Lawrence, the Ukrainians who haven't qualified for the Olympics yet, beat the British at the first World Cup a couple of weeks ago with a very dominant performance. So you're going to have the British that are looking to, you know, cement themselves as favorites for the Olympic medal. And then you have the Ukrainians who are just looking to build on their confidence. But there's some other really cool talking points. The Swiss crew has been sort of changed a little bit. They finished, I think, in fourth last year. It's an up-and-coming crew that have been performing extremely well. And I think another crew that has a potential of breaking into the top three this season, along with crews like Romania, Poland, who we haven't seen too much out of. Lithuania seem to have put a new combination together in this boat. We haven't seen the Lithuanians, Lawrence, that much in the quad, but you know they have a good sculling background. And the French as well. Sure. The French have also sort of reinvigorated their quad with some big names. It looks like they're targeting their top women's scullers into the quad. And you know the pressure must be like for the French crews in the world, being the host nations. They want to put together really fast crews. So this is possibly on the women's side a crew that they are looking to target to, you know, possibly pick up a medal. So a very interesting mix of quality on the women's side, Lawrence. And I think the quad has provided some really good racing over the last couple of regattas. So I'd be really a big shout out to the women's quad. Have a look at them. I think they're going to have some fantastic racing this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you 100%. I think that's definitely a big one to watch over the weekend. And I really like what you say about the French. Like, we need to see them, you know, come to the front in one or two of these events, because, you know, we as you say, it's a home Olympics for them. This is like the place you want to be performing. This is the place you want to be racing at the games for your home Olympics. So you know, I think it'll be very good for rowing if we have one or two French crews that are starting to really come to the front and take charge, because that's also going to draw a lot of spectators and a lot of the vibe for the French crowds over the games. So yeah, I think we need that. We need to see that. So hopefully this is maybe an event they can do it in. But yeah, I think I like what you said about the Ukraine, the Ukraine crew. They've had a good start to the season, and you said they haven't qualified yet, so you know they got their work cut out for them. And the British, obviously, you know, it's surprising that they didn't have that good first World Cup, and the rest of their country is killing it, really owning the stage. So you know they need to pull up their socks, otherwise there's definitely going to be changes.
Lawrence, the British women's quad is not the only world champion from Great Britain that's been dethroned recently, eh?
No, so maybe it is just you know, kind of a build up, and you know the British are very good at peaking for world champs for the Olympics and not taking these early regattas too seriously. So there might definitely be an element of, you know, just training fatigue that they struggled with at World Cup One, but you know they still did bloody well, the British. And I would say out of everyone, this is probably the biggest drop off from gold to fourth.
Yeah, right. I think so. I'm not sure.
Third.
I just need
fourth.
Need double check.
Yeah, I'm looking here.
You are so correct. Yeah, so that is quite a big drop off.
So I mean, it's just an interesting kind of talking point for that event. Then I think the other races that I'm like, you know, there are events that have, you know, such big names missing that I think we don't need to really dig into, and we need to see how those events kind of play out over the weekend before we really dig into them and chat a lot about them, but I'm very keen on the fours. I think for men's four, we got another massive mashup between the Italians and the British. And I feel like this is quite a tipping point for this battle over the season. You know, if the Italians take another win on the British, that's going to rock the British confidence big time. Whereas if the British take the win back, you know, then it's kind of even Stevens, and it's, you know, we can then like expect more big battles going forward. But yeah, I wouldn't want to be the British here going in, and if you don't win this race, I think this is a big race to win for the season for them.
Really, and I think, Lawrence, I want to bring up something else that's quite interesting. It's like the men's four since World Champs last year has seen some quite big shifts in the trajectory of the event. And the two big shifts I'm talking about is the reintroduction of this phenomenal Italian four that has, you know, we know about Giuseppe and Matteo, and we also, you know, Giovanni Abagnale is Olympic medalist and a mainstay from the Italian team. But I think, you know, the reintroduction of the Italian four, and what is also very interesting, Lawrence, is that the Australians' decision to maybe target their eight. For me, this means that like the men's fours is an open event in my mind. I think they haven't been, besides the British, a lot of crews that have cemented themselves. If you look at the different medalists from, you know, 2022, when you had the Dutch and the Romania finish on the podium with the Brits, and then 2023 you had the Kiwis and the Americans, and then, you know, it's a lot of changeover from the you know, in the men's four. So for me, it's going to be a really interesting season going through to Olympics, and I think it's like, you know, there's many opportunities, I think, for crews here to pick up a lot of confidence. I just look at the French crew, and like you were mentioning crews to target, you know, this French four, I think, is something that has been in development. They've gone from strength to strength. They finished in the A final last year, and there is a fair amount of experience in this crew. I think Benoit Brunet has been a part of the French team going on 10 years now. He's competed in this boat for many, many years. So has Theo, and the Turland twins are sort of the young guns who have, you know, made their name in the under 23 pair. They went to the Olympics in the pair. So that's a really good combination to look out for. And then also, Lawrence, another thing I wanted to chat about is the Romanians. They have shifted their crews around, and you've got a new Romanian four being stroked by Ciprian Tudose. Ciprian is, I think, probably one of their best athletes. He's the silver medalist in the men's pair from Tokyo. He raced in the double last year, and now he's back in the sweep boat. So, you know, really a lot to race for here. And then we have the undercurrent of the Olympic qualification on the line. So yeah, a very exciting event. And without a doubt, all eyes are going to be on the Brits to see how they react to the result from the first World Cup.
Dude, 100%. This for me it's like borderline as exciting for me as the men's pair is going to be, because as big of an event to watch, because you've got all these big names, you've got this huge battle between GB and Italy. And I mean, this is a battle of pride, I think, for this regatta. I think this is a big one between them to like establish, you know, if the Italians win another one on the British, they establish some serious dominance in this event. But if the British claw back, then it's game on. And as you said, you're adding this French crew to the mix. And as you said, yeah, they have experience, but they also, their coach, you know, Jürgen Krobler coming in. I mean, this is his boat class, the men's four. Mm. This is where he's won the most medals, and he's an expert. So I think it just kind of all opens it up to be an awesome regatta and an awesome race in the men's four.
Do you think, Lawrence, it's enough time since the first World Cup for the British to sort of do something about that performance? Because I don't know if it is really. I think if it suits anyone, I would say that the Italian four are going to be the stronger crew for it, in terms of gaining confidence and gaining sort of changing the game plan again. And I think the Italians possess a X factor weapon in their sprint that I think is the chink in the Brits' armor. I don't think the Brits have raced against a crew yet that has the sprinting capabilities of the Italians. You know, I think the Aussie four that they've raced so many times are really fast. We've built this reputation of being super fast in the beginning of the race, but not having a big sprint at the end. And I think the Brits have formed their crew around beating the Australians after Tokyo and going against that sort of capability.
Some knowledge that you're dropping here.
With some big knowledge. I think that's led them to have such a strong middle thousands. But you now have the Italians that have this, you know, this weapon that the Brits have not faced yet in the men's four. And you could see in the First World Cup, the Brits got caught with the sprints. I don't think they have, it looked like they're rigging. You know, they were sprinting, but they weren't able to turn the gear that they needed. And that's something the Italians possess, which I think makes them such a big threat.
I would say, I mean, you made the point, like, is there enough time for them to change? I don't think there's enough time for them to, you know, train more and fix some fundamental part of their race that they don't have yet. But there's certainly enough time to assess what happened, what went wrong. And unless the British had their best race ever and then lost at the sprint, it's more likely that they had a terrible race and that they didn't execute certain aspects that they have in their tank and that they want to put out there, but they didn't manage to get it right. So I think there's definitely enough time for them to fix elements of their race and come back with a better race at Europeans that can deal with the Italians. And I really like that idea, that like kind of thought process that they've built this race to beat the Aussies. And now you're facing the complete opposite kind of race plan and race profile from these Italians. But dude, these Italians are also, I mean, these are proper athletes. These guys have been racing for so many years, a lot of experience and like, yeah, just ridiculous pedigree. I mean, Giuseppe and Lotto have raced and won so many races. And Abagnale is, you know, he raced, won bronze medal in Rio and still as an under 23. You know, he raced in under 23s in 2016 after the games. So, you know, he's a serious athlete. And then to have the confidence to put the youngest, newest member to the crew in the stroke seat and have him perform like he did at the World Cup one, I think this is a dangerous, dangerous crew. And again, the same as the British. They might not have had their best race. You know, we've seen their first race. They might still be a lot of tweaking and a lot of things that they can change to make this combination a little bit quicker. So I think we're going to see some very, very good racing in the men's four throughout the season. That's my prediction.
Yeah, it's certainly a big grudge match on the weekend. And I think there are not enough of those in the sport. There are not enough of these 1v1 kind of boxing fights, I think, to allude to. And, you know, I feel like you have that with the Swiss and the Brits in the men's pair. And you've got it in the four now with the Italians and the British. But another event, Lawrence, where I feel like
you go into another event. Before you go into another event, we had to chat about Mikolaj Burda.
Oh, yes, of course. How can we not talk about him?
Racing in the men's four. These guys have been racing. I mean, we've got some serious experience coming down the track at European Champs 2024.
Serious experience.
He's racing. He's 43 this year.
He's 42. No, he's 42 this year.
Oh, he turns 42 this year. He raced his first international race in 1999. So, you know, he's had 25 years of competing internationally for Poland. And
yes, Lawrence, he went to the 2004 Olympics in Athens.
Yeah, he's done five Olympic Games already.
He's done
four,
five.
8, 12, 16, 21. And if they haven't qualified yet, but if he qualifies here, that'll be six Olympic Games, which is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. So, yeah, a big shout out. I think we'll be shouting out to certain athletes. A big shout out to Mikolaj Burda, who is the, you know, the veteran of the Polish racing team. And I think a notable
similar there, Jake. Sorry, I know you want to say a notable, but I'm just saying, like, their crew has also been around for a while. You know, they've performed very well, didn't they? They won in 2019.
Yeah, world European champions. I was going to say that they were world champions in 2019. Yeah.
Yeah, is that what you were saying?
Yeah, no, I was saying, that's what I was saying.
On the same page. Cool. Yeah, so, I mean, flip, man, this is a proper, it's a proper regatta that we're going into, yeah. And I can't wait to see some of these races come down the track and to see what we've missed. Because there's a lot in here that I think that, you know, just looking at the entries, it's hard to say where the event's going to take us on the weekend. And I think when we come into our Regatta Madness episode on Sunday, we're going to be chatting a lot about a lot of different different topics, I think.
Yeah, definitely, Lawrence. And I think to start wrapping things up, I really want to chat about, and on the women's side, another big event and a notable event where we're going to have some Romanian debutantes this season is the Women's Double Scull. And, you know, I'm talking about Simona Radus and Ancuta Botnar from Romania. They are the probably most dominant crew in world rowing at the moment. And to a certain extent, where I think, honestly, you have a lot of countries that are now targeting the women's quad. And I'm not surprised the women's quad has become such a big event recently, because I think the Romanians in the double have sort of chased a lot of top athletes that would have chosen the double as their premier event, have now chosen the quad as an event because of how strong the Romanians are in this event. So yeah, the Romanians are racing at European champs, and one crew that can beat them is the Lithuanians with Dovile Rumkute and Donata Caroline. Donata, a Olympic bronze medalist from 2016 and another veteran of the Lithuanian rowing team. But I think also you have the Irish combination, which I'm really excited to see, Lawrence. They've really, really strong, a young combination. And Alison Bergen, who's their stroke, has come from under 23 level, made a really strong transition into senior rowing. And I think they're going to be a potential medalist this year at the Olympic Games. So also notable that they're the only Irish crew combinations that's racing at this Europeans. And I think it's got to do with their sort of experience and trying to get them to race a little bit more. So yeah, going to be exciting. And another thing I wanted to chat to you, Lawrence, also in the women's doubles, that the Norwegian women's double, who picked up the, I think, the bronze medal at the first World Cup, they've changed their combination. Silver medal. They've changed their combination. They've put in their women's sculler, who picked up a notable bronze medal at the first World Cup, Inga Kavli, who had a race of her life to pick up that medal. They're obviously testing out a new combination. And I think this wouldn't be surprised me if we saw them in the mix with the top doubles. So again, another event where we have a lot of interesting things to look out for.
And we've got Janine Gamelin in the Swiss crew. And as we were discussing, like a lot of non-qualified crews here that have a lot of fighting to do before they go in. And like we spoke about it quite a lot at World Cup One. And I think this, you know, for the Europeans, this is a huge benefit to have this extra race in to go to final qualification, which is in 2 weeks' time. Hey, Jake?
No, it's in 4 weeks.
4 weeks' time. So we got a bit of time, but yeah.
I mean, I hope we have a bit of time. It's 2 weeks. I'm caught with my pants down.
But it's this is a big regatta for those crews that haven't qualified yet. So yeah, I mean, incredible. I can't wait to see Romania. And as you said, the Lithuanians, you know, they looked very dangerous in a couple of regattas last season. So if there is anyone to knock them off their perch, I would put my money on the Lithuanians. And I think this Norway combination is going to surprise us this weekend. So
very much so.
Yeah. Jake, any other crews you want to chat about?
No, I think we've been rambling on for a bit of time here, Lawrence. I think our hype trains and our regattamas, I think our knowledge just becomes greater. We become bigger fans of the rowing world. And it's going to be really exciting. But I think we've covered most of our bases. I think those are going to be the big talking points for the weekend. And, you know, we're going to have the Regatta Madness episode where we're going to kind of have a look at the aftermath of Europeans and see where things lie going forward.
For sure, Jakey. And I think to wrap things up, Jake, tell us, how's your training going? Where are you at? I know you're back for a little bit of a breather from the Zanin training camp. And yeah, you said you've been on the limit.
Yeah, been on the limits. We got a very brief interlude just back home for a few days to see some family. And then we're going to go back on our last sort of last prep to head into late qualifications. Yeah, very exciting. I think we've definitely chosen possibly the hardest event to qualify a boat in at the moment, but I'm very excited. You know, it's going to be lots of fun. Well, it's going to be an exciting time.
And you said that Uncle Paul has been updated coach you. For our listeners, Uncle Paul, Paul Jackson, coached the lightweight men's four in 2012 and has been part of kind of rowing South Africa, I would say, since 1992. I want to say he's like on a coaching level. He's done a lot of work. He was one of our first episodes on the Row Show. So just full of rowing wisdom and knowledge. And I'm sure you guys have enjoyed having him around and him sprinkling the wisdom on you guys.
No, it's been awesome to have him around. He, like you say, he's a legend of South African rowing. You know, very charismatic, very thoughtful coach. He coached us to Rio in 2016 too. So it's great to have him around. So we've had a really, really lucky to have him on board and coaching us. So yeah, but things are going well. I'm looking forward to it. You know, late qualifiers is going to be one hell of a time.
Yeah. And on Uncle Paul, I would say his value to the team is, you know, he's not there watching every rowing stroke and kind of absorbing the technical details and the changes in rowing as it goes, but he is exceptional in, like, you know, getting the best out of a team and making a team work well together and kind of everyone's roles and functions in the boat. That's where he is a master. So I think, you know, it doesn't matter necessarily on the rowing side, which he is bloody good at, but that team element is where he adds so much value. So I'm sure you guys are feeling that out. And yeah, Jake, good luck with the next part of your camp. And yeah, pull like a dog. Just watch Paula Donovan. and that'll gee you up. The other thing that I've been watching that actually I wanted to chat about is I've been watching Chasing the Sun 2, which is for those non-rugby fans out there, it's South Africa's kind of documentary series about our South African rugby team going to the World Cup last year and coming away with the win. Kind of like Netflix's Full Swing and Drive to Survive, that kind of vibe, and just really in depth in the change room, in the practice and into the games. And man, I've really enjoyed it from like a, you know, just a technical point, like how professional the team is and like the team culture for me is like, this is where I can see how we won. I mean, I know the games were super close. We could have lost it at any moment. But the team culture and the way they kind of present themselves to the team is next level. I really enjoyed watching that. So I would suggest that to anyone. I don't think you have to be a massive rugby fan. I think it'll help, but it's pretty good. And if you're a massive rugby fan and you're not South African,
I haven't started watching it yet, but I'm definitely going to start. I've heard such good things about it.
Jake, you honestly, I reckon it's worth, like, for South African, I think it's worth like 5 seconds on the Ergo if you watch that.
I'm doing it, dude. I'm watching it 100%.
I think if you're a big rugby fan and you're British or French, I don't think it's going to be a very good watch. No. I think you're not going to enjoy it much.
From New Zealand.
Yeah, I haven't got to that episode yet.
Awesome. But yeah, also Lawrence, just I think before we close things off, massive shout out to our Patreons, lifeblood of the show, big massive support. And I think we also just a quick shout out to the fact that we've introduced our own rowing fantasy league where you get to pick your bunch of rowers for each World Cup that comes along the way. And we're going to have a sort of a tally as the season goes along with some prize money at the end. So yeah, that's going to be a big thing for our Patreons this season. We've been trying to get it integrated for a while. And that's a huge help from our production assistant, James Britton, who's come on board and really helped us a lot. So yeah, massive shout out to have a look on Patreon And that's one of the benefits.
Yeah, I think on our on the fantasy league, I would say this regatta is going to be another trial run, and we're just going to test it out. There's a system that we're going to try and implement, but I don't think we're going to have it ready for this one. And then those will come online for World Cup 2, World Cup 3, and the Olympic Games, where we'll have some prize money. So, yeah, looking forward to it. It's going to be awesome.
Awesome stuff, Lawrence. It's been good to be back, Jake, on the podcast with you.
Well, and
I'll see you soon for the Regatta Madness, eh?
We'll check you soon. Enjoy the racing. And those listening, enjoy the racing. It's going to be bangers out there. Ciao.